Hello and welcome back to the Guardian Film Show. This week we're rolling the dice and chancing our arm and running the A to Z of Hollywood titans, all the way from Ben Affleck to Woody Allen. It's an A-list in every sense. It's the Guardian Film Show. Coming up on this week's show, Justin Timberlake and Ben Affleck make a killing in the gambling caper Runner Runner. And Hugh Jackman and Jake Gyllenhaal walk the line in the torrid crime saga Prisoners. But we begin on a rather less macho note with Blue Jasmine, Woody Allen's drama about the financial crash, class divisions, and the kindness of strangers. This stars Cate Blanchett as a fragile socialite who faces an uncertain future at the home of her estranged adoptive sister. The Guardian's Catherine Shourd went down to pay the actor a call, which just goes to show, it never rains, but it pours.
You know, I have never been to San Francisco. I'll be staying with my sister.
Jasmine!
Oh my God.
Look at you.
Your place is homey.
Oh, the flight was bumpy.
The food was awful.
I mean, you'd think first class.
I thought you were tapped out.
I'm dead broke. Really, I mean, the government took everything.
As a species, we're often more engaged in fantasy than we are in reality. You know, we put our hand on the cave wall. We deny climate change. You know, we don't look at that. Our constructed sense of selves is often very much more real than what is actually going on. The Greek tragedy element of it is the fact that there's a sense of a fated collapse to Jasmine and her world, in that she's, even before her demise, you know, and her fall from grace as an Upper East Side princess because of her husband's financial indiscretions, she was somebody who had a very fictionalized, romanticized sense of self. She's changed her name. She's inculcated herself in the right social circles. Her sense of her identity is very hollow. And so I think, you know, it's fated that something is going to go terribly wrong.
Anxiety, nightmares, and a nervous breakdown. There's only so many traumas a person can withstand till they take to the streets and start screaming.
Joining me now poolside is Catherine Shourd and Henry Barnes. Catherine, does Blue Jasmine have the whiff of Oscar night success about it?
Sort of. There's something a bit rotten, smelling rancidly in its core, in the best possible way, because what's surprising about this film is that you think it's a kind of sympathetic, Woody character study of a lady, and actually it's a character assassination. Mm. And it's a pretty comprehensive
one.
It's
quite unsparing, isn't it?
It's very unsparing. And it's very hard to talk about this film without sort of revealing spoilers. But suffice to say that, you know, it doesn't turn out great for her.
Henry, it might not turn out great for Jasmine personally, but does the film turn out OK?
I think it does, but I think you have to go into this realising that you're holding your breath, really praying for another great Woody Allen film after all this time. And I think this might be it. We're finally there. What I really liked about the sourness of the film, which I agree is there in spades, is that you start in the first 20 minutes or so with a very, very traditional Woody Allen, modern Woody Allen film. And it's, you know, you have the black and white titles, you've got the plinky-blonky jazz, you've got these characters that are sort of stereotypes of working class heroes in some ways. And then slowly, bit by bit, the music's drawn out, the colour kind of seeps away from it. You're not so honeyed anymore. And you get this quite bleak drama at the heart of it.
If he's taking, which he obviously is, Streetcar Named Desire as his sort of touchstone here, then the Blanche DuBois character in the Tennessee Williams play had this kind of great high tragedy about her. I'm not sure Jasmine does quite. She's pitiable, but she doesn't have that kind of epic quality, does she?
No, not at all. And, you know, in later scenes, you see her really in quite a mess, quite a state. You can smell the sweat off her. I mean, it's a film very, very invested in smell, in the same way that, say, Crimes and Misdemeanors were very invested in sight. You know, it's all about chili and jasmine and, you know, a ginger. It's, you know, unbelievably like that. She's, you know, it's about the aesthetic taste of you know, the aesthetic taste of people, really. Mm. But, yeah, I mean, you do see her wrecked, absolutely wrecked. In fact, Woody Allen has said that this Streetcar Named Desire thing, which people have, you know, gone on about, it wasn't really a conscious thing. He sort of denies that and denies that it's topical, denies that it's loads and loads of things, you know, and just says, oh, no, he was just interested in this woman. And, of course, this is the kind of woman that Woody Allen now sees all the time. Now he lives exclusively on the Upper East Side and exclusively amongst this sort of benefactor type.
Yeah.
which is interesting.
Which he obviously has a very ambivalent relationship to. I mean, it's pretty painful in terms of how he's treating this material, isn't it? There's none of the warmth of what they say his lighter, funnier films.
No,
here.
Certainly not by the end of the film. No, it's bleak. It's quite despairing in its own way. And it's interesting also that he's taking a female lead character and doing this with her, whereas the men in this film. Really, you know, they get quite an easy ride. They don't want for anything, really. And if they want for something, it's something that they've had already in the past. Mm. Whereas there's this feeling that even when she's at her high living in the affluence of Manhattan, Jasmine's never going to be happy. And in a traditional Woody Allen film, that kind of character would be given a bit of an easy pass and have some funny lines to throw out there, even have a redemption of sorts in the end. And there's nothing of that sort here. It's just a completely bleak character study about someone losing it piece by piece.
Where does it rank among the great Woody films?
I don't, you know, I mean, it is absolutely, you know, I know everybody says this all the time about Woody Allen films because they're so desperate for them to actually be returned to form. But, and it actually is. It's the first one in 20 years that is a returned form. It's properly good, but it's not up there with the
it's
best.
Not it's not Crimes and Misdemeanors, it's not Hannah and Her Sisters,
it really isn't. And it's not because it's bleaker. It just doesn't quite crackle in that same way. I wouldn't want to see it again. Mm. And the others I want to see all my life, all the time.
Tip big, boys. Tip big because you get good service and they count on tips. You know, someday when you come into great wealth, you must remember to be generous.
Mom said you used to be okay, but you got crazy.
Yeah, and then you talk to yourself.
That's Cate Blanchett on the slippery slope in Blue Jasmine. But now, to lift the spirits, it's Runner Runner, a film so good they named it twice. It's got the private jets and the dancing girls. It's got Ben Affleck with a fat cigar. What in the world could possibly go wrong?
You saw it. Came to me.
This is a little something for your troubles.
Less, of course, you like sticking around and taking a shot at a real business.
Guaranteed 7 figures in the first 18 months.
Suckers beware. The shady world of online gambling is not quite the bed of roses it's cracked up to be. Runner Runner stars Justin Timberlake as the Princeton rookie who takes a job working for Ben Affleck's Wizard of Odds down in Costa Rica, where the women like nothing better than dancing around the swimming pool in their bikinis. It looks like heaven, but it might be hell.
Hello?
I got something I need you to do.
My friend!
Henry, would you trust a man who looks like that?
Oh, Justin Timberlake did, so if it's good enough for JT, then maybe it's good enough for me. This is bad and boring. Justin Timberlake is the bad and Ben Affleck's the boring. It's just on snooze, this. There's something really dry and sad and depressing about films like this that
and
ever get
so
made.
And so familiar that it becomes a kind familiar. Of karaoke film where you think, oh, right, now we're at this point of the drama.
Yeah. I wondered if part of it was that they're talking about online gambling and they've hit that brick wall of, we're making a film partly about the internet. What the hell do we do and make online gambling exciting?
Yeah, there's a lot of swooping cameras around the blackjack table or around the laptop.
Yeah.
This is like the engine room of online gambling. This is like from this sort of tax haven in Costa Rica where it's just non-stop party.
Yeah.
And it's got that tabloid thing of shouting it loud and then condemning it. It's doing that thing where it's saying, look at this world, isn't this great? But wait a minute, maybe it's not.
In a way, it's like Boiler Room, you know, like the financial drama in that way that, there's the glamour of it and it's exciting, but uh-oh, the seedy underbelly is coming and you better watch out. And
I mean, I couldn't see that Ben Affleck was a wrong one. I thought he seemed very nice. And then even when he's feeding chickens to his crocodiles, you're thinking, no, he's still all right. He's going to turn out all right. Well, you know, why on earth would this lovely man not be so smart after all?
Well, I think part of the problem with that is that Ben Affleck in this is completely on autopilot and doesn't really seem to be in the film. And then because of that, Justin Timberlake has to take the weight of the movie and be a lead actor. And he's just not. I mean, In Time was dreadful as well, and he was supposed to carry the lead of that. He's very good as a support in, like, The Social Network, maybe, or even in Inside Llewyn Davis. He's very good in that, the new Coen Brothers film. It's just when he has to take the full weight of films like this, even if it's a kind of very staple genre thing like this, he doesn't really know what to do with it. And then you've got Gemma Arterton, who, as far as I can tell, wears a dress. That's what she does in the film. Yeah. She wears a dress.
She wears it well.
She wears it well. I think Gemma Arterton's a really good actor. She's just got, either she or her agent's got horrible taste in movies. Yeah. And she's been in, you know, two, like Tamara Drew was good. And then, what was the other one that was half decent? Disappearance of Alice Creed. She was in that as well. And that's maybe the two good films she's been in.
Two Saint Trinian.
But other than that, there's just this feeling with her that she's scrabbling around to find a part that will work for her. And this just isn't it. There isn't a part here for her to work with.
And what's in it for Affleck? I mean, presumably he shot this before he won the Oscar for Argo.
Yeah.
But even so, this is a pretty redundant role for him to take, isn't it?
I think you're right, though. I think this is from the period of him as an actor who's still struggling to find a decent role. And I don't think much has changed in that regard. I mean, he's just landed Batman, which could be his redemption in the acting stakes. But just because he's now turned his directing career around and actually made something of that and is a player in that regard, doesn't mean that the acting parts are going to get necessarily any better for him. And this is proof of that, I think.
Richie, you doing, bud? Fellas, basically this place is to crocodiles what Goldman Sachs is to pricks with skinny ties. Cruise ships come down here, they dump off their edible waste, the crocs have learned to swim downriver, and they know to bite whatever jumps in the water. All right, go ahead. All right, ready?
Christ, Ivan!
How's that feel? Is that any good?
Hey! Are you all right, Richie?
Nobody wins in Runner Runner. And now just time for one more feature presentation. Slamming the door on this week's show, it's Prisoners, in which the town is small, the crime is big, and the American man is in all kinds of crisis. And Henry Barnes went down to meet the film's star, Hugh Jackman.
Wear hat, please. You're just getting over a cold.
Where are your sisters?
I can't find them.
Anna? Joy?
I checked the entire house. They're not here.
Dad, there's this RV, and they were playing on it. We thought there was someone inside.
You wait here.
Let me go.
I couldn't find them.
911.
Detective Loki.
Do you have children, Detective?
I'm going to find your daughters.
There is a kind of blind optimism that I have and many have that the government or everything's going to be fine. And actually, even in recent history, look at Hurricane Katrina, Robin, there's many examples where people are let down by the system. And why wouldn't we be more prepared? I think it's really interesting how the film, in many ways, thematically, is dealing with the individual versus the institutional. You know, the cop versus the father who's just acting on his own. The truth of the matter is you need a balance of the two. Getting that balance right is very, very difficult and very frustrating. We've all been on the wrong end of bureaucracy, you know. But without it, also, it would be the Wild West, which is not necessarily the greatest place to be.
Alex!
I want to talk. He's a free man. I'm a free man.
Hey!
Tell me what's your deal with him.
Tell me. They didn't cry until I left them.
What did you say?
Have you ever taken the law into your own hands?
Yeah, I stole some chips once because I was hungry. I don't care about that law for stealing. I was hungry. It was important. I was about 8 years old at the time. Yeah. I chose the most loud, crinkly wrapper and thought hiding it behind my back would work. Doesn't work, let me tell you.
You got caught.
I busted, yeah. And I was sweating and crying while I took it. It was pathetic.
Catherine, are you a fan of these kind of chilly, angsty dramas?
Well, I would have been if it had been that. I mean, it sort of comes on and you think, oh, it's got a lovely sheen and, you know, it's Roger Deakins cinematography and it looks very, very classy and it won the third prize in Toronto. So it's sort of quite quality. And it's got all the sort of hallmarks quality, but sort of slowly as all the people come on and do their thing, you sort of think, oh, my God, it's really quite bad. You know, and they're all overacting like crazy. I mean, Jake Gyllenhaal does this blinking thing the whole time, and Paul Dano does this kind of part that you think he'd have done if his career had gone really wrong, and Terence Howard's not good. And there's this scene where Paul Dano, who's convicted, who's suspected of having abducted these two lovely little girls on Thanksgiving Day, goes for a walk, and he's singing the song that they were singing as they were abducted or earlier that day.
Is it the Ace of Spades?
And he's taking the dog for a walk, and he just lifts the dog up by its kind of hanging it, just like that. It's just full of sort of moments like that. They're just so sort of shockingly broad. You can't believe what's going on. I sat there open mouth.
And yet it's got rave reviews. It's top of the US box office. It seems to have got the kind of the double whammy of critical and commercial success behind it.
Yeah, I think on the critical side, I think if you have someone like Roger Deakins working on it, he's going to make something preposterous look handsome. Mm. And it's always going to look great. Like, the weather in this is amazing. Like, it's just sheet rain, freezing cold, and it has an effect on the characters. It plays a character in itself. And that is shot in a way that you're totally convinced that you're in the environment. And that somehow leads you into what I think audiences have responded to, which is this really crappy tabloid fear story of what's the worst thing that can happen to you? Oh, your daughter can get abducted and you have no idea what's happening to her. And it's really kind of hokey.
Isn't there some sort of gestures towards social realism and the contemporary state of America today? There's kind of slight references to the war on terror and the sort of the fate of the small town. Does that sit well with the drama, or does that just feel kind of cheap adornment?
Didn't pick up on that much, to be honest.
Well, there's a lot of paranoia in it. Like, the lead character has a bomb shelter, and he's one of these preppers, so he's got everything ready for the end of the world. He's a man that thinks the worst is always going to happen to him. So there's partly that, but again, I think they're kind of aiming for the stands in that way. They're saying, you know, this is for you, Mr. America, Mr. Middle America, go for it and run with this story and feel it. And there's absolutely no reason why you shouldn't make films like that, but it just feels kind of cynically done in this film, I think.
Because Take Shelter was about that, and that was a fine film.
Yeah, I mean, there's plenty of examples of films that are great for Middle America and for the modern angst about the family falling apart at the seams. But this one just does it so bluntly and so plainly.
Isn't it good, though, to see Hugh Jackman at least trying a properly dramatic role after the ridiculous Les Miserables and Wolverine and all that gump?
He is, and he does redeem himself. I like Hugh Jackman. You know, he's impossible to dislike, isn't he? I mean, he comes across so well in interviews, and he's obviously a lovely bloke, and this, you know, he's great, and you couldn't not feel sympathy. Again, that loads the balance of the film quite dramatically. But yeah, I mean, I guess so. I'd like to see him do something a bit more challenging, honestly. I mean, it's not a terrible film, this. It's not terrible. I just, coming off the back of all the buzz and going in kind of, you're thinking, my God, this is so classy. And then it's just a bit shocking how it's actually got a heart of trash.
Yeah, and a lot of the buzz about it is this is a film about grey areas. There's no heroes, there's no villains. You know, it's a classic 70s film in that regard. But if you really have to come out in your press notes and in publicity and say, this is a film about grey areas, then you've already separated out the greys, exactly. So, yeah, I mean, it's not a bad film at all. It's an interesting thriller, but it really does screw it up by the end of it.
Well, maybe he wasn't on his own. How could he drive an RV if he has an IQ of a 10-year-old?
Hey, we're considering all possibilities.
I don't think you are considering all possibilities.
I hear what you're saying.
No, listen to me. Just shut up for a second.
This is what I'm going to need you to do for me. I need you to calm down. Mr. Dover, I understand this is an incredibly hard time, but I have every uniformed police officer in this state looking for Anna.
I don't understand what any of this means. They said he ran. They said he tried to get away. I don't understand why he would try to run away.
I hear what you're saying. I'm not crossing anybody off my list. Just let me do my job.
Hugh Jackman and Jake Gyllenhaal bouncing off the walls in Prisoners. And that's it, our sentence is complete. My thanks to cellmates Catherine Short and Henry Barnes for holding my hand and getting me through it. It got a little nasty in there for a while, but now the three musketeers are finally free. The bad news, of course, is that we're repeat offenders. We're back, same place, next week.